In a few minutes, Kim is going to sing again. We're very lucky today. She's going to sing Lord of the Dance. And when I was younger, I learned to dance. To be more specific, when I was 6, I took up Highland dancing. And it was a big part of my life for a number of years. I took lessons in the sunroom of a house in Ottawa. And I have many fond memories of dancing as the bagpipe music swirled from an old turntable on the floor. I learned the steps and the techniques that had been passed on through the generations by my ancestors in Scotland and then Nova Scotia. The sword dance, the Highland fling, the chantreuse. Highland dancing is a solo dance. It's very much about learning patterns, mastering steps, perfecting finger positions, jumping higher and smiling just so. And sooner than later, my teacher told me that I was ready for competitions. I'm not sure if an 8-year-old me thought that the word dancing and competition were a strange combination of words, but I understood that this was part of the pattern that I was supposed to follow. And over 100 young dancers, all wearing our family tartans, gathered in a high school gym. There were about 20 of us in the 8 and under category, and each of us had our competitor number sewn onto our, or pinned onto our kilts. In front of us, a panel of judges sat, and they critiqued and scored our every step, turn, and smile. And then they handed out ribbons. First place. Third place. First place. We're so proud of you, dear. Janet, that was great. I want you to move to the advanced lessons next week. And these words felt good to me. And I wanted more. I wanted more of this dance that I was learning, and for much of my life, I followed the steps that I learned when I was Highland dancing in Ottawa. I learned to strive, and to compete, and to succeed, and to enjoy that, and to advance, and then repeat. And it worked pretty well for me, and I didn't think too much about it. But 5 years ago, I began working at L'Arche, and I learned about a different kind of dance. This dance is inspired and led by people with intellectual disability and the assistants who share their lives and homes and accompany them on life's journey in L'Arche communities. This dance has no prescribed steps, no competitions, no judges, and no first place ribbons. So I'd like to share with you today two experiences that I had at L'Arche that helped me learn about the L'Arche dance. Shortly after I began my consulting work, because that was my work at L'Arche, it was a little bit removed from the day-to-day life, I was invited to a federation meeting in Atlanta, Georgia. There, hundreds of people from L'Arche, from around the world, gathered. About a third of the people had intellectual disability, and the others were assistants. I was pretty apprehensive, because I only really knew one person who was going to be there. I also had very little experience with people with intellectual disability, and I wasn't quite sure how I was going to relate to the assistants who had made a much more generous choice with their lives than I had made myself. I was also a bit intimidated by the daily worship that was listed in the program. So I took a plane and a subway, and then I walked the last few blocks wheeling my suitcase behind me, and I do remember this feeling of trepidation combined with a strong desire to learn. Surely these days would help me to understand the needs and struggles of those with intellectual disability, and I could learn more about what I could do to help the assistants who did so much for them. And over these days at the Federation meeting, I discovered a number of things. I found it surprisingly easy to get to know and enjoy several of the men and women with intellectual disability. Their warm and unconditional welcome drew me in quickly. The assistants I met were very grounded in a mission that was beyond themselves, and they didn't really think they were anything special, so it was easy to relate to them as well. I was impressed by how the communities of L'Arche listened to the voices of people with intellectual disability, even though many of them couldn't speak, both at the meeting and at the time before the meeting and after. And there were indeed needs and struggles evident at the Federation meeting, but these took a backseat to celebration and joy. Everyone was having a lot of fun. Another thing I noticed was that the assistants weren't so much doing things for people with disability, but they were doing things with them, and they were being with them. And this distinction in spirit with which you help somebody else, I could see in front of me, it was making a big difference to how everybody was relating. And the church services, yes, there was a church service every day at a different church of a different denomination in Atlanta, but they were the most open, not but, and they were the most joyful, open, joy-filled celebrations and reflections of life that I have ever experienced in a place of worship. There was a trust that God was there and a path towards a greater truth, but it was very multi-faith, interdenominational, and a very open invitation for people to explore. So rather than just supporting people with intellectual disabilities, what I saw at this Federation meeting was something more. It was a radical acceptance and celebration which put the people with disabilities at the center as the teachers and as the leaders. And that week will count as one of the most meaningful and joy-filled experiences of my life. I remember a particular moment on the afternoon of day 4, celebrating and singing in the meeting hall along with hundreds of others. Wheelchairs and walkers were visible signs of weaknesses and struggles that we all have, but that was not the focus. There was such a joy and certainty in our beautiful, shared, vulnerable humanity that I found myself with tears streaming down my face as I watched this dance unfold before me. There were costumes and colors and music and streamers, and people were actually up dancing. The stage was crowded and everyone wanted to be up there, and everyone was welcome up there, and everyone was up there. What I'd read about in the books about L'Arche was coming to life before my eyes. People were helping one another out, and they were showing each other the way. And the women and men with intellectual disability were leading the dance, and they were inviting everyone else to follow. I did reflect at that moment that if Jesus was to come back to this world and look about for his kingdom, he might just be pleased with what was going on in that room. It was as if I was an accidental guest at that great banquet we sang about and that John read about. The poor had said yes, and no one else was there. Everyone else was too busy to attend, and I discovered a feast and a celebration that was beyond my imagining. A number of months later, I witnessed another important aspect of L'Arche that hadn't been so visible in the larger gathering in Atlanta. This time it was a more intimate gathering, and I listened to two women, Virginia and Tamaki, tell the story of their friendship. They're from the L'Arche Lethbridge community. But first, a word about friendships at L'Arche. At L'Arche, mutual friendships between people with disability and the assistants who share life with them are really at the heart of their community. People with disability tend to have a strong desire for genuine trust-based relationships and for love. They issue a very open and welcoming invitation to friendship, and they will meet you as you are. They really could care less what you've accomplished or what your challenges and vulnerabilities are. Assistants, in turn, really do want to be with their friend with disability. And to be with, you need to meet as equals, not with one taking care of the other, or with one being stronger than the other. Assistants work to see through the disability, to know the person, to learn their story, to find their beauty, to understand their gifts, to see their potential for growth, and to help them make a difference in this world. I'd read about these relationships, but being with Virginia and Tamaki, as they described and were actually living out in front of me, their friendship was a very, very powerful moment for me. Virginia told her story of arriving in L'Arche after moving from one placement to another without any real sense of home, and she didn't trust much. Tamaki shared her story of recent arrival from Japan with minimal English skills and trying to find her place as a new assistant in Alberta. Both were hesitant and unsure of how to relate. Someone suggested they take art classes. And their time spent together in these classes, learning alongside one another and with each other, and with each woman developing their own passion as an artist and for art, was the basis for developing a friendship based on trust and mutual growth. They learned from one another and were changed by one another. What struck me was I was not listening to Virginia's story supported by Tamaki any more than I was listening to Tamaki's story supported by Virginia. And I know that sharing the story with you doesn't do it justice. You had to be there. And I was only listening to their story and watching a small part of it, a couple of minutes. I hadn't been there watching it. But it's really important to understand that these mutual relationships based on vulnerability and the need for everybody to grow They're lived in thousands of communities, or by thousands of people in communities around the world, and they really are at the heart of L'Arche. So I am moved by what I've seen at L'Arche, and I wonder, what does it mean for my own life? Like everyone here, probably, I struggle to understand what it is to live well and to live fully. And L'Arche challenges me to reflect on the patterns that I naturally and unknowingly have fallen into in my life. These are the patterns I was introduced to through my Highland dancing when I was younger. I often go about my life accomplishing, judging, admiring those who are successful, valuing my journey as an individual more than my journey as part of a community. I live through my strengths rather than my weaknesses. And what I've learned at L'Arche has changed my idea of how I want to dance. The Highland dancing I learned when I was younger was wonderful, and I'm very grateful for it, and it led me to many great things, and indeed some friends who are in this room I wouldn't know if I hadn't started Highland dancing. The dance I'm learning from L'Arche is something more profound. It feels closer to the heart of our reality as human beings. It's one that young children live quite naturally, and it's often valued with more clarity by people when they're towards the end of their life. What the dance calls me to is to be more welcoming before being judging, to value relationships before valuing accomplishment, to appreciate people for their authenticity and their weaknesses rather than appreciating them only for their strength, to do things with others rather than doing things for others, to value community along with independence, to learn to celebrate better. That's a hard one for me. I'm not good at celebrating. And to live more fully through embracing my own vulnerability and weakness. So I need to learn to do those things before and as I'm learning to accept the invitation to the banquet. Thank you.